Okay, we are going to conduct the next part. So that is the Dhamma sermon. Today we are going to start a new series. Actually, last week we discussed a new sutta, which is a very short one. And so we are now going to have a next sutta, which is also very interesting and very popular sutta. And most of you are very familiar. And it is called Mahamangala Sutta. So this is another interesting one available in the Suttanipata, just after the Hiri Sutta, what we have discussed last time. And this is where Buddha talks about the blessings. Actually, there is a little history to this Sutta. And so people were wondering, what is a blessing? And they sometimes thought what they see early in the morning, so that becomes a blessing, what we call as the Ditta Mangalika, where sometimes in the morning that you see a beautiful sight, a person that you like, a very beautiful sunrise. Likewise, sometimes people have somewhat certain beliefs that these sights are very attractive or these sights are auspicious. And if you see that, they believe, okay, this is the blessing. This is a blessing. And on the other hand, certain other group of people believe, they think what they hear is a blessing. If they are hearing something good, if they are hearing a very beautiful music or kind of a melody or a blessing, kind of a verse, poem. So these are sometimes considered as a blessing. So that is sometimes called as a Sutta Mangalika. What is being heard is considered as a blessing. And on the other hand, certain other group believe Mutta Mangalika. So that is, if you come across a very delicious food, auspicious kind of food, so that is considered as a blessing. And if you have a good touch from a gifted person, so that is also considered as a blessing. So likewise, so what is a blessing? So this is a kind of a argument, kind of a thought happened to many people, and they were a little arguing about what is really a blessing. And according to the Dhamma, so this wandering actually has gone even to the Devas, and they also are now considering what is really a blessing. And then it is mentioned in the Dhamma, particularly in this Sutta commentary, that the question has gone even to the god Sakka. And now the Devas, celestial beings, are asking from god Sakka, what is really a blessing? And then god Sakka is asking, where is the Buddha? And then the other Devas are telling, yes, he is in the Jetavanarama. Then God Sakka is telling, okay, you better ask from the Buddha. The Buddha is the one who is more capable of answering this question. So let's go and ask the question. And so he asks, request one of the celestial being, one of the God, to go and ask the question. And accordingly, that Deva is now approaching the Buddha while Buddha was in Savatthi at the Jetha's Grove, in the Anathapindika's park. So that is where the question is asked from the Buddha. So that particular Deva, with stunning beauty, have illuminated the whole Jetavanarama, Jetha's Grove. And now he approached the Buddha and he is mentioning the situation. So many people can't decide what is really a blessing. And even the celestial beings, even the Devas, can't decide what is really a blessing. So therefore, please answer this question. Bahu deva manussacha mangalani achintayu. Akankamana sottanam bruhi mangalam uttama. So many devas and many human beings have reflected on blessings. They want to know the blessings, but they don't know what exactly they are. So please answer this question. So now Buddha starts talking about these blessings. Actually, they are not kind of superficial blessings. They are fairly related to the truth. And we can say they are fairly dependent on the dependent arising, what we call as the Patisamuppada. So basically, they are encouraging some vigor, encouraging some effort, and not just believing on the sort of superficial beliefs. Rather than believing in those beliefs, so Buddha is putting ourselves into kind of responsible actions, proper actions, or wholesome actions. And that also has to be done with a lot of effort and a lot of mindfulness and wisdom. So let's see what are the things that Buddha recognized as a kind of a blessing to one's life. Asevanacha balana, panditanancha sevana, pujacha pujaniyana, etam mangala muttamam. Not associating with fools and associating with the wise. Venerating those worthy of veneration, this is the highest blessing. Now, in our spiritual life, so as we are moving forward, there may be people that we have to associate, and there may be people that we should not associate. So that is something that we have to slowly recognize, because there are a group of people, they are not much interested about any spiritual development, and they are more into worldly sense, worldly matters, and their whole thinking process is fairly entangled in that kind of a thinking. And if we start associating them, we also sometimes feeling somewhat lethargic towards the spiritual achievements. We also feels like drifted from our practice. And sometimes we get different kinds of doubts about the practice. And we also sometimes get discouraged. But on the other hand, there are other people who are themselves practicing the Buddha's teaching. They themselves are fairly recognize their own path and certainly confident in what they do. And they, as Kalyanamittas, encourage others also to follow the same path. So likewise, as we are stepping into the mindfulness path, the spiritual path, so there are new friends who are actually going in the same direction, and there are certain others who are not interested in that direction, and they are sometimes trying to pull us also to a wrong direction. So we should not associate those kind of people who are in a way bad friends. So if we start associating bad friends or bad people, then it can ruin our path as well. So having a good association is extremely important. Otherwise, there's a higher possibility that also that wrong association can lead to wrong ways or wrong destinations. Probably you can remember there is one beautiful story happened during the Buddha's time. So there was a rich person who had actually a huge amount of wealth coming from his parents. And he was married to another woman who is also having a huge amount of wealth coming from her parents. And now this person is actually serving to the king. And they are doing a good life, maintaining a good life. But there is a kind of another person who actually found out, so this male, is a very rich guy. And he tries slowly to tempt him to the intoxicants. Now slowly he actually give him first free of charge, and slowly now he's spending for others, and slowly he's asking many others to get involved. Now this wealthy person is the one who is spending all the money. Slowly he become very famous, and many others also join. Now he has become a real alcoholic, and later he spent as much as possible where he don't have any wealth now. Now he is using his wife's wealth as well, and he almost completed or finished even that way. And ultimately, this couple has to sell the property where they are living in the house. Now they are begging in the street. So one day, actually, Buddha saw these couples, and then he make a comment to Venerable Ananda. He's telling that if this person, if he has gone in the correct direction in the mundane life, he could be the richest person in this whole city. Because he had that initial capital, he had that initial wealth. If he properly managed that, he could have been the richest person in this whole city. But unfortunately, he couldn't do that. But if he given up drunkenness, being alcoholic, after some time and then recover from that, then he could have been the second richest in the whole city. So likewise, Buddha explained the possibilities he had. In the mundane life, in the typical mundane life, so he had that capacity, but unfortunately, because of that wrong association, he has ruined his life. And on the other hand, interestingly, he is talking about the supramundane time side as well. And he says, Buddha says, so if this person, without living a household life, he become a monk. If he associate a good person and he start a spiritual life, he could have been an arahant. But if he couldn't do that at his early stages, if he, say, become a monk and start associating good people and practice the Dhamma, then he could have been a non-returner, anagama. So likewise, Buddha say he could have been a sotapanna, sakadagami, sotapanna. So likewise, all the possibilities were there to this person, but unfortunately, even none of them have happened. So you can see that a person is born with a very gifted past merit, but the association has completely changed his way of life. So the association is a very critical point. So that is why, as the first blessing, Buddha say, don't associate fools. And on the other hand, Buddha say, associate with the wise, who are either wiser than us or equally wise to us, and who are also practicing, who are in the correct Dhamma path. So those are the people that we have to associate. So as practitioners, so we have to keep this in our mind. We have to be careful whom that we are associating. And pujacha pujaniyana. So that is also very interesting. So what is the kind of attitude we have? So as we develop in our spiritual path, are we become sort of conceited? Are we forgetting about our sort of parents? So are we forgetting about our teachers? So aren't we grateful? Do we have any gratitude? Do we have kind of a attitude of paying respect, being sort of maintaining certain amount of humble humility? Or are we very much like acting with some sullen head? So this is something that sometimes we have to recognize. So either in the mundane world or in the spiritual path, so these things can happen. So if people sometimes, particularly in the mundane world, so if they are rich or if they are quite gifted or maybe wealthy, educated, so it can lead to forgetting about their past and neglecting about their parents, neglecting about their, say, teachers. And now they become more and more conceited so that they can't respect another person. And on the other hand, in the spiritual side also, if one is sort of properly not managing oneself, there are also a possibility that one is trying to compare oneself with another person and trying to keep oneself in the up and looking down another person using many, many, many reasons. thinking that, say, one's morality is higher, one's wisdom is higher, or one's concentration is higher. So likewise, many reasons, even in the spiritual life, that one can become conceited. On such situation, we can't actually respect another person because our attitude has become somewhat rotten, somewhat changed, somewhat gone in the wrong direction. So recognizing the Buddha, recognizing the Dhamma, recognizing the Sangha, the disciples, and even the good people, and paying respect actually makes us quite humble, and our heart become very much like soft heart, so that the spiritual path may naturally evolve in ourselves. But if we are with a very fixed view and heart become somewhat rigid, so that means it's very difficult to change. So the malleability, the flexibility is not there. So the spiritual path requires such kind of a malleable, flexible, soft kind of attitude within ourselves. Then only it may slowly evolve within us. The Dhamma may operate within us. And pujaca pujaniyana, so that attitude, so we have the attitude of respecting another person, respecting another, let's say, a good person, a wise person. So that kind of respectful, grateful attitude is a blessing. So when you have that gratitude, when you have that humble heart, so there are no regrets. There are no much kind of fixed views, conceited views. But you have a very melt, soft, open heart. So that is a blessing. So you can laugh, you can smile, and you can spend in a kind of a lighter life. So this is something Buddha say as a blessing. And then, patirupa desa vasocha pubbecha kata punyata atta samma panidhicha etang mangala muttama. Patirupa desa vasocha, residing in a suitable place. Pubbecha kata punyata, merit done in the past. Atta samma panidhicha, and correcting oneself, directing oneself in the correct path. Etam mangala muttama, this is the highest blessing. Now, actually this nowadays, now Dhamma is available through many means. And therefore, even if you are at a far away place, you still can reach the Dhamma, you can listen to Dhamma, you can even practice the Dhamma. But there are certain occasions that you can't reach the Dhamma, you can't listen to Dhamma, you can't practice Dhamma, you don't have good association, and the country is in a war, or country is in a famine, or the whole country is in a pandemic. So if we are in such kind of a situation, so it's not a time to practice, because it's quite difficult to practice sometimes. Now, say for example, there are monks actually from Ukraine. Actually, I have associated them during the previous monastery. But now the Ukraine has become a war zone. If you are there, so it's quite unlikely that we are easily continue our practice. Now, right now, that is not a good place to reside in a way. So likewise, time to time, a country, a region can become not suitable or not having a conducive environment to the practice. But on the other hand, if we are having a very conducive environment for practice, so that is a blessing. Say you have good association, you have a very good group, they are also practicing, they are also encouraging in the same path, and all the other facilities are also available. Helpful environment is also available. So likewise, there are many parameters or attributes that we can look into which are more favorable. And if those favorable, particularly favorable conditions are available for our practice, so that is a patirupa desa. That is a very suitable place to live. And on the other hand, merit done in the past, so that is also important. Because sometimes we see, even though people are trying hard, the previous merit also is something that matters. Sometimes we call it as parami, the perfections. So if we are lack of past parami, sometimes we can even deviate at one point, we can give up the practice at one point, and we can go to wrong directions, and we don't even get a desire to practice. There is no desire even to practice mindfulness, even though others are requesting, others are urging, explaining its value. We don't have any desire to practice, because that is, in a way, has some relationship with the past merit. So if we have practiced in the past, if we have done something good in the past, and certain wholesome power that we are carrying forward actually has a great influence. So that wholesome power actually put us to some extent in the correct direction also, and encourages us in the correct direction. So if that is connected with a good association with the Kalyana Mittas, so then we are in a very favorable situation. On the other hand, within this life also, we can do a lot of meritorious activities. We don't need to think that I don't have any past merit, so I am not suitable for this practice. Rather, within this life also, we can do a lot of merits. Actually, making merits not necessarily involve money. You can do a lot of merits without much involving or without much spending money. So, generating a wholesome heart is not much relevant to the money, to the wealth. But if you have wealth, you can do much better. That is also another part. But most of the other time, so if we are developing particularly the meditation and say loving heart, so that is somewhere that we are slowly, slowly developing ourselves from the merit as well. And another part is the morality. So if we are maintaining good moral standards, good moral conduct, that is another area we are slowly growing in our merit power. So that is another concern. As we are growing with the morality, as we are maintaining proper conduct, and as much as possible maintaining a loving heart, loving kindness, and keeping our mind with a soft, wholesome attitude. And then if we are able to step into the meditation, then actually we are in a way nurturing ourselves with a lot of merit. So that will slowly even abandon our past bad karma and slowly fill up to the right side, or to the good karma, to the white side. And directing oneself rightly. Now this is also very critical. Actually, there are many different paths available, many different beliefs available, many different teachers available. So how we select Buddha as the teacher? So why we have selected Buddha as the teacher? That is also a very critical decision in a way. So nowadays there are many, many people who don't have any teacher, who don't have any belief, who don't have any religion. So that is now even growing in the world. And many people say that they are not believing anyone. They don't have any religious attachments. And sometimes people think that is a kind of a gift, or that is kind of free thinking. But on the other hand, Buddha also has encouraged free thinking. It is not that Buddha sort of put us any commandments. Rather, he has shown the path. So he has given the responsibility to us. Rather than he, like a governor or like a dictator, appearing like a dictator, he has shown the path. So this is the Dhamma, so this is the teaching. You can come and see. You can come and explore. You can come and put it into action and see for yourself. So that kind of an open attitude is very interesting, appearing in the Dhamma. Rather than trying to stereotype ourselves, rather than trying to sort of push ourselves into a kind of a framework. So Buddha is opening up the situation and tell us, okay, Dhamma has this quality and it is inviting us to come and see. Put me into practice and see for yourself. So putting us in that direction, and in the particularly in the samadhi, in the correct view, is very, very critical. So that's why in the correct view, there are two sides. The first one is the mundane type of samadhi. So first of all, we need to put ourselves in that mundane type of samadhi. We can't achieve supramundane type of samadhi without ourselves very well established in the mundane type of samadhi. So that mundane side of samadhi fairly involves the morality. So if we have to be a morally responsible person, we have to respect the ethics, and we have to believe in karma. If we do something good, the good results may follow. If we do something bad, the bad results may follow. So that simple principle our lives have to be based on. And sometimes we can't fully comprehend how it is working, the karma, how it is operating and all these things. Actually, we can't experimentally find out. But the idea is, if we do something good, it may produce good results within this life, and sometimes people may start appreciating us. And even there is no future life, still it is therefore worthy of continuing a good way of life, continuing with wholesome life. On the other hand, if we are maintaining kind of an unwholesome, rude kind of activities, so kind of a bad activity, so that can actually give a disgrace to ourselves, and the wise people may criticize us. And if there is a future birth, then we are going to suffer in the future as well. So kind of making a kind of comparative decision making and putting ourselves in the correct path is very, very important. So in the correct view, therefore, actually show us, okay, this is the correct thing, this is the correct way of doing things, or these are the good things, these are the bad things, these are the wholesome things, these are the unwholesome things. So that understanding is very, very important. So if we are having that proper understanding, then we can put ourselves in the correct direction. Say, for example, good deeds and the bad deeds. Now say there are 10 good deeds Buddha mentioned. So through the body, we should not, or we need to abstain from killing. We need to abstain from stealing. We need to abstain from illicit sex. Now these are the three things that we need to do through the body. On the other hand, through the words, speech, abstaining from false speech, abstaining from divisive speech, abstaining from harsh speech, and abstaining from idle chattering. Now, these are the four things we need to maintain, four standards we need to maintain from our speech, in our speech. And through the mind, we have to give up covetousness. That is where that we have a unhealthy desire towards someone else's belonging, someone else's possessions, kind of a attachment to that, so that we have to give up the covetousness. And on the other hand, giving up the hatred, if the mind is burning with hate, ill will, so that also has to be give up. And again, we have to establish ourselves in the correct view. So these are the three parts, mentally good things that Buddha mentioned. Now, simple understanding of these 10 things and putting us in the correct side is very, very important, because if we simply neglect all these and allow things to happen as they are coming, and you know, as the society is moving forward and how people are sort of quickly become rich by continuing various misdeeds. If we are simply following that kind of a role, so then it's not going to become a blessing to our life. One can become easily rich, but only a temporary achievement, because within this life also things can change. And in the next lives, certainly things can change. because we can't see the repercussions, we can't see the consequences. So understanding proper things, understanding what is merit, what is demerit, what is wholesome, what is unwholesome, and putting ourselves in the correct side, directing ourselves in the proper path, is therefore very, very important. Bahu satchancha sippancha vinayocha susikkhito subhasitacha yavacha etam mangalam uttama. So subhasitacha yavacha, well spoken speech, so that we already discussed. So basically Buddha has given a kind of a standard or criteria to maintain in our speech. So that has to be maintained. And more than that, now there is a good speech as well. So there is a wise speech. So once, when one is talking something good, which is beneficial to oneself, which is beneficial to another person, so that is a very good speech, very good word. So that becomes a blessing. And on the other hand, vinayocha susikkhito. So basically, well trained in the discipline, maintaining good moral conduct. So that is becoming a blessing. Because if we are maintaining such kind of a moral conduct, even though mind is sometimes tempted to do something wrong, that moral conduct helps us to maintaining our good way of life. Because mind is not yet purified. So there are various defilements can come up in the mind. They may want, the mind may even ask to break the precepts. But if we are as a standard, if we are maintaining a good moral conduct, so that becomes kind of a safeguard to ourselves. So it becomes a blessing for ourselves. Because you are maintaining kind of a good moral standard. So that moral standard become a blessing to yourself. And you basically start feeling kind of a confident person because you are maintaining that moral standard. So it becomes a blessing. And good learning in the, particularly here, bahu satchanta sippancha. So kind of learnedness. And on the other hand, particularly you have a fair understanding and fair hands-on experience on a kind of a craft. So that is also important. Otherwise, we can't maintain our life. So we need fair amount of money, some wealth to continue our life. And in the mundane level, so that is something very, very important. So understanding and having a hands-on experience on a very, in a way, non-harmful kind of a craft, non-harmful profession. So if you have that education or that hands-on experience in that type of a profession, so that becomes a blessing to you. So you can find easily a job, you can continue your studies, or you can continue your further life because you have a fairly hands-on experience, you are an expert in a particular area. So that type of skill is something Buddha appreciated and it becomes a blessing. Okay, I think we can continue the rest of the skills or rest of the blessings that Buddha talks next week. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions. You are muted.
Sarai Dante, we have four questions.
Right.
So, question number one of four is mindful sitting. Dear Bante, my sitting practice is observing the breath and mindfulness on breathing. I can focus on the place of touch on my nostrils for 20 to 30 breaths and identify the differences of the in-breath and out-breath. Usually, I do not need the noting technique and keep the attention on the observations from the start. After the process settles, I also observe my mind drifts away to some thoughts and other sensations of the body, sounds, etc. I know approximately the stage and time this happens, but I cannot exactly identify or know it beforehand. I go prepared as per your guidance. After a few minutes, when I realize that I am not with the breath, my focus comes back slowly to the breath again and settles down. Is there anything else I should do in my practice around this experience? Much merits for your valuable guidance with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So basically, when you are well established in the breathing, say you exactly know this is the in-breath, this is the out-breath, and see whether now you are saying now you are fairly capable of maintaining that. Now, after you are confident, probably now you can look at the subtle differences between in-breath and out-breath. Whether the in-breath is longer or the out-breath is longer. Whether the, say, where in-breath is going in, from which nostril, and from which nostril the out-breath is coming out. A little exploration you can now introduce, because now certain amount of mindfulness is available and certain amount of concentration is also available. Now you can add a little amount of wisdom part as well. Little kind of, say, investigation, a little amount of comprehension you can now add to the picture. And other than, even if you feel that still not, say, if you are trying to do that, say, when you are trying to do that, if mind starts sort of becoming restless or again scattered, then you can further continue your practice as usual. And again, when you are confident, you can introduce this investigation.
Question number 2 of 4. It's a general question. Dear Venerable Sir, can you please explain Samma Ajiva in the Noble Path, Eightfold Path, and how it can be fulfilled through mindfulness practice? How does it differ from Samma Kammanta with metta?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, there's a significant difference. Actually, you know, Samma Kammanta actually are the ones that we already discussed from the body. There are three things that Buddha say not to do. Basically, not killing, not stealing, not involved with wrong sexual conduct. So that is the three things actually Buddha say as the Samma Kammanta. But Samma Ajiva, they are Buddha say for lay people. So the lay people should not involve with, say, selling weapons, selling poison, selling, say, slaves, and what else? Anyone can remember? But there are five types of trade that Buddha say those are not suitable. Selling weapons, selling animals for flesh, and selling slaves, selling poison. So likewise, certain, you know, that a society, a group of other people can harm themselves if we trade these kind of things. So that is the wrong trading that Buddha say that we need to avoid. So that becomes the Samma Ajiva if we are not doing any of those. But what we are selling or what we are involving with, what our profession as a professional that we are doing, if it is not harmful to anyone, it is beneficial to the society, to yourself and to the others. So that is a proper ajiva, a correct livelihood. So the livelihood has to be something good. And on the other hand, we can say, so when we are concerned about our practice, so this livelihood actually matters, because if we are too much involved with the profession and if you have no time at all, so that is also a little concern, because we need certain amount of time to spend for our own spiritual practice. So the livelihood has to be accordingly adjusted. And it has to be a proper livelihood, a correct livelihood, a right livelihood. Not harming ourselves and not harming another person, but something beneficial, something useful to the whole society. So such kind of a livelihood that we have to continue. And that is what the difference between correct livelihood and then the correct action, correct, that is Samma Kammanta.
Question number 3 of 5. This is a Dhamma Sermon question. Dear Bhante, related to last week's Dhamma sermon, what is the relationship of moral fear and moral shame to the precepts? Example, if you are observing 10 precepts throughout and live a practicing life, is there a place for Hiriyottappa in that life? With metta, that's
yes, the question. Definitely there is a place. Now, say for example, when we are trying to maintain our way of life according to the precepts, a moral conduct we are trying to maintain, and at that time, say, there are occasions that occasions could arise that to break the precepts. Now, say a serpent is coming and approaching, and there's a desire to kill it. There's an intention to kill it. But now I have a precept which is administered, which is observed. So I am observing a precept called Panatipata Veramani Sikkhapadan Samadhiya. So I'm not going to kill. So now the moral dread, actually, in one sense, it's actually coming, thinking that if I kill this animal, so there could be some future danger to myself. So that kind, and again, someone, if you now say, so I am going to kill, and once it is being heard that I have killed, that others may disprove about it. So likewise, there's a way that I am being criticized. So still we are in a kind of mundane kind of samadhi, but it's a samadhi. So I believe the karma. So this is a wrong karma I'm going to do, unwholesome karma I'm going to do. So that is something I am now fear of. Now that is where one way moral dread come into the picture. But on the other hand, moral shame. Moral shame appear like, okay, I am already observing a precept. So if I am breaking the precept, so it is a kind of a shameful act, because I have promised in front of the Buddha, in front of the Dhamma, in front of the Sangha, that I am trying to adhere to the precept. So now it is a kind of a breach that I am going to do. Now I am sort of shameful of breaking that precept. I am shameful of breaching that precept. So that is how, in a way, the moral shame come to the picture. So basically, kind of a shame is there. So I am trying to maintain a fairly higher standard, but now I am going to sort of lower it again, to take it to the lower level, to a mean level again. So that is where moral shame come to the picture, and trying to avoid it. So don't do that. So it is not suitable to you. So the moral shame come in front and advise us, so don't do it. It is not proper to you. You are now trying to maintain a higher standard. You are a meditator now. It may give a wrong implication to you, kind of a bad influence to you. So likewise, the moral shame and moral dread comes together and give us all that reasons why we should avoid killing. So likewise, we can recognize how moral shame and moral dread sort of act together, typically act together to maintain ourselves in the proper moral path.
Question number 4 of 7 is a general question. Dear Pandey, during practice time, I can establish mindfulness on walking and while sitting as well on breathing without much effort. My mind drifts time to time, but I can manage that as per your guidance. I am still a novice to the practice and have a problem in containing my mind during day-to-day activities and at work. My mind drifts to storytelling and fantasizing very easily, and I realize spending a lot of time without any knowledge of such an act. Time to time, I get glimpses of my fantasizing and I get frustrated and annoyed about myself. However, I cannot stop this drifting, and I find myself helpless. Appreciate Bhante's advice with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this is where particularly the walking meditation is very, very important. So you better do walking meditation as much as possible. So whenever that drifting happens, so recognize where your foot is. So the touching of the foot is a kind of a reminder to our wandering mind. Again and again, the kind of a gross touching of the foot happens to the ground. So make use that as a kind of a reminder to you that I have to be there. So my attention should be there. But the mind again wander. That doesn't matter. But again and again, when your foot touching the ground, just take your mind, your attention there. So that is, in a way, that we are breaking our fantasization. So that fantasy being broken at different places, that number of places start increasing as our mindfulness is developing. So that actually influenced the story, that fantasy, and ultimately the fantasy or that story, the proliferation become less and less or weaker, and ultimately fair amount of mindfulness is available with you to your body. So the body awareness may improve. So your attention is now growing at your feet to your body. So likewise, you better come out from the fantasy. And on the other hand, when you are doing certain activities, try to be mindful. Say, for example, while you are brushing your teeth, you can be mindful. While you are eating, you can be mindful. While you are driving, you can be mindful. So likewise, introduce mindfulness to certain activities so that you are not allowing your mind to simply idle and get into that wrong cycle of inner chatter or the proliferation, meditation. Rather, you better involve in that purposeful keeping your attention onto a present activity. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Bhante, there is a surprising thing that happened during this evening's meditation, which I never experienced previously. During Bhante's guidance, my whole face was like a mess. Different types of sensations started around my nose, lips, very hard heartbeat and sensations within the mouth, like different color lights come on same time in Torana, in SL, during Vesak. When I couldn't focus to one, as all different sensations are equally strong. This situation happened for about 10 minutes and gradually came back to normal. My question is, what should I do when faced with this type of situation in future? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Now, in this kind of situation, probably if you can maintain choiceless awareness without giving any prominence to anything. So many things are there. Sounds are there. Sensations are there. Lights are there. Thoughts are there. But not selecting anything. You are just maintaining kind of a equanimity towards everything. So if you can do that, so just you are in a different level, but things are happening. All these conditioned phenomena are operating at different another level. Say different lights are coming and going, sounds are coming and going, thoughts are coming and going, sights are coming and going. Many things are happening, but you are at another level. With you are not bothered about any of them. You are maintaining a little bit of equanimity. And that helps to settle the mind. But if you start struggling and if you start wondering or panicking, so then the things may further aggravate.
Question number 6 of 8. This is a Dhamma sermon question. Dear Bhante, today's Dhamma sermon and the verse Patirupa Desa Vasocha, is this blessing more related to living in a suitable place conductive to following Dhamma? How about education, health, financial stability and other requisites needed for stable life to follow Dhamma?
That is important. That is also important, but we need to find out. I mean, now say for example, there are say certain regions. So all these things are available. Say education is available, comfort is available, but the majority of the people are simply following the pleasure principle. So they are, participating into parties and all these things. And so that inclination towards Dhamma is totally missing. So such kind of societies are there, areas are there. So the majority of people are completely into a different way of life, more into the pleasure principle. But on the other hand, certain other areas, now people are majority, say they have kind of an association, kind of an encouragement, at the same time safeguarding themselves and helping each other, encouraging each other in the spiritual side as well. So all these are very favorable, and we can't say that everywhere we can find all these favorable situations. And we ourselves have to become our own saviors. We can't say that every time we can expect everything from the outside. And that is in a way from the technology, that is one advantage today we can have, even though we are in a very far remote place. thanks to the technology, we can access the Dhamma. And if we have certain amount of wisdom, we can practice the Dhamma as well. And through the technology, we can participate in discussions, and we can access teachers, and we can inquire about our doubts. And all the facilities are available thanks to the technology. But on the other hand, if we don't have that kind of a facilities, then actually we are totally depending on to whom that we are associating. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. This is a general question. Bhante, what does the phrase just be exactly mean, please? Do we just accept whatever arises through the 6 senses without judgment and having a non-duality type of understanding? At times, it is difficult to just be and accept the present situation as it is, especially if one is faced with the persistent problem, as emotions could be high. There is a danger of suppressing the problem as it could proliferate. So does one need to analyze or investigate the problem, see the cause, etc., and see how best to reduce the stress, then just be? Bhante's advice is most appreciated. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, what you are telling is exactly correct. So just be is not encouraged at every time. So basically, at the beginning of our practice, there's a kind of an intentional involvement of, say, practicing. So you have to encourage yourself, you have to overcome various obstacles, and we need to find good people, good Kalyana Mitras, we have to follow the Dhamma, we need to maintain good moral conduct. So fair participation is there, an encouragement is there, intentional activities are there. But later, now suppose now you are in a Vipassana practice, so just be is a very far away approach that we are taking, kind of a strategy that we have to take, that is not at the early stage. Now, assume that now you are in a deep vipassana and you have understood the impermanent nature of all the conditioned phenomena, the unsatisfactory nature of all conditioned phenomena, and non-self nature of all conditioned phenomena. Now, thoroughly you understood. As a result of that, now slowly mind become dispassionate towards all these different phenomena. And now slowly, slowly, mind become disinterested about it, dispassionate about it, disenchanted about it, and mind finds its own seclusion. And now assume that mind has become freed, released, not attaching to anything in the world. And at that level, you have to just be. So this is the place we need to encourage ourselves. If we are doing something again, if we are trying to do something again, so that becomes another sankhara, another intentional activity. So rather we need to minimize intentional activities at this level, and we have to very much like do nothing at this level. Just be, without making any new sankharas. So that is how we are now slowly consolidating that new kind of a domain, new kind of a, say, our experience in this non-doing kind of a situation. Actually, previously we are in a doing mode, now we are in a being mode. So this being mode is something now we need to encourage. So that is not encouraged at the early stage. Yeah, we need to recognize these things properly. So we should not use far away approach, far away strategy at our early stage of practice.
Question number 8 of 9. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, how do we handle something like pest control? If it is something we should comply by the standards, we would not be killing directly, but someone else will come and spray the chemicals. How do we handle this situation? That's the another question.
Yeah, very interesting. But if we don't invite that person, he may not come, isn't it? So that means even though the other person is killing, he is the one spreading, but we did the invitation, we are the ones paying in a way. So there is a certain amount of participation in that sense. So therefore, that's why it's difficult actually as human beings. So how we are maintaining our lives, with complete morality. It's very difficult, not easy. So there are pesticides, there are that our children that we need to protect, there are our loved ones that we need to protect. So for that, that requires pesticides, that requires insecticides, and all these things are there. But on the other hand, if we have certain repellents, without killing them, probably you can try them. So now better you Google and search. So what are the mosquito repellents, insect repellents, than the pesticides?
Question number 9, it's a literature question, Bante. It's a general question. It says, Bante has traveled to Australia several times. Is it a Patirupa Desha?
I think it is becoming a Patirupa Desha now. Because I found among the all other countries, now especially the Sri Lankans have migrated, I found that Australia has become the majority. The majority of the migrant people there actually are very enthusiastic on the Dhamma. And they are involved in the practice wholeheartedly. It is not that superficially that they are following. Rather, there's a deep interest in Dhamma and they themselves are practicing Dhamma. And I think it is becoming a Patirupa Desha and already being a Patirupa Desha. It depends actually. These things are actually changing. We can't say that a particular region is constantly become a Patirupa Desha. So we can't say like that. So things are actually changing. It's the people actually, we are the ones actually making that change. Say, that is why particularly today's technology has a significant influence that we can use to the proper side. Like currently what we are doing. Say now we have about 20 participants and we are at different places. Now we have virtually make a kind of a Patirupa Desha. So this gathering is happening through the internet, through the technology. But in the, say 100 years ago, we didn't have this kind of a facility, this kind of a capacity. So likewise, today's technology, if we are using them properly, we can make use of it in the proper side to our advantage. But on the other hand, if we don't have that facility, if you are totally dependent on the direct touch, direct movement with the others, direct association, then actually the Patirupa Desha actually has a significant impact.
We have come to the end of the written questions and we're almost up on time. So I think we can end the program today. So to finish the program today, I would first like to thank Bante for his valuable time with this schedule at the monastery. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. To all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and also to all the participants for joining today, practicing and sharing their questions. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Therwan Saranai.
Yeah, Therwan Saranai. Thank you very much for all your participation. And thank you, Chamila, for continuing the session for a long time now. Okay, Therwan Saranai.
Therwan Saranai.